Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Digging the New Digs, that's music from the soundtrack to The Incredibles, and I actually chose that specially for my next guest rather than something like Stop, Wait a Minute, Mr. Postman, because Digging the New Digs for the last while has been Sophie Motley, who is still in my eyes the new artistic director of the Everyman Theatre. Good morning to you, Sophie. It's great to have you on the other end of the phone today.
Oh, thanks so much, Amory. And I must say, I still feel like the new director of the Everyman Theatre, so let's keep saying that. We were shut down for a good year of my tenure.
That's exactly it. So I still feel like it's kind of still a fresh new experience for you. And also because one of the reasons we're talking today is not just because of the new season that was recently launched for the Everyman Theatre, which we mightn't even have time to go into fully today. The reason we're talking is because this is now the upcoming play is the first that you've had a chance to direct for the theatre, which is exciting.
It's very exciting, and it's been a long time coming, so I'm delighted. And actually, I think our first performance is this coming Friday. So it's getting close, and it's getting nail-biting, and the set's being built in the theatre today.
Oh my God, so it's a full-on tech day. Do you love all of that side of things?
Yeah, I love the technical rehearsals, because you've been in the rehearsal room for a month imagining what it's going to look like, and then you hand it over to the designers who've been dreaming up brilliant things with you for months, but you've sort of not thought about it because you've been focusing on telling the story with the actors. And then suddenly you walk into the theatre and it's magic, because that world that you imagined and you talked about is suddenly in front of you.
It really is. And, you know, I suppose I want to talk to you about this particular play first, because, you know, as you were saying, your first year of the tenure was practically in fully conceived lockdown, with a kind of a preset program of online stuff, which was fantastic and all the rest of it. But when you had a chance then to sort of step up and say, okay, this is what we're going to do, and everyone was looking around to say, okay, what is Sophie Motley going to bring to us? I suppose I didn't expect John B. Keane, but tell me about how this particular work is the one you've chosen.
Well, I mean, I didn't choose it in a way, because when I first started, I sent an email to the audience of the Everyman introducing myself, and I asked people what they'd like to see, and a lot of people wrote back and said, we want to see John B. Keane. Mm. So in a way, it's the audience's choice, but I also then took that and thought, okay, John B., interesting, you know, we're coming out of 2 years of being closed. I don't know if we'll necessarily have the budget for the cast numbers of The Field or Sive or Big Maggie, but I've always loved the letters. And I was in a very rural place during the lockdown, and I know that for myself and a lot of my neighbours, the one person they saw every day or spoke to was the post person or the DPD delivery driver or the food delivery driver. And in going back to John B. Keane's letters, which are just brilliant and madly feel incredibly contemporary, I looked at Letters of a Country Postman and thought, ooh, you could adapt that. And there's some lovely stories in there. It's joyful. It's funny, which I think is what everybody needs, because we're still at a point when a lot of people are only just venturing out to the theatre for the first time since the plague. So I got into a room with three performers and worked out, okay, how do we do this? Does it work? This was last summer now. And the result of spending a couple of days thinking about it and reading it was, this could work, actually. it needs to be adapted, but because it's in letter form, often if you chop up a letter from one person to another, and you then chop up the response, you can create dialogue.
Yes, yes.
And, I mean, it's mad. It was written in 1977, Al-Marie, and John Bikin is talking about climate change. He's talking about women's reproductive rights. He's talking about loneliness and isolation. And it's really unexpected. There's even almost the precursor to internet trolling in there.
Wow.
In the form of somebody writing anonymous letters.
Goodness, I love it. You know, I mean, Cork has always had such a great affinity with John B, because Cork was first to stage John B. Keane and give him a platform. And I know Michael Toomey, many people remember him talking on the program many times about that before. But it's wonderful to see that you have drawn out the contemporary comparisons and the contemporary issues, rather than feeling that we're looking at a snapshot of rural Ireland that is gone. Like, quite often the passions and the emotions and the fears, the desires and the crack that we share, that's timeless.
Absolutely. And I think no more than in a piece like this, I'm ever surprised by its relevance. And I think that we've forgotten how to write letters as a society. And it was only 2 years ago that Ompost were giving us free letters and encouraging us to write letters. Mm. And I feel like that was the beginning of the revival of something really magical. And on a totally personal note, I would love people to be writing letters more. I try to write letters. But we need to, I guess, I feel like if we sing songs to the postal service, then perhaps we'll write letters more.
No, you're so right. There's nothing so disheartening as when the only thing that comes through the letterbox are bills and junk mail, and that we have to wait for Christmas or birthdays for there to be some kind of personal connection. Emails and texts and WhatsApps and everything, they're all fantastic, but they're not the same. There's nothing like having a letter in your hand. And I know anyone who has ever found, will say, old letters from your grandparents, or letters that your parents wrote to each other, or letters that you got from somebody years ago, and if you still have them, how much they mean. So much more than scrolling back through WhatsApp messages. There really is nothing like it. There is something much deeper in the power of a letter, because people write a letter, even if it's not anonymous. People write a letter in solitary situations, and they do pour more into a letter than they might in an otherwise frivolous message, wouldn't they?
Absolutely. And I mean, we're now at a point where we deliver voice notes to each other, which are, I mean, in a way that's brilliant, because I feel like it means we're coming further back to being able to pick up the phone and ring each other. But, you know, at the point in which this story is being told, the telephone was only just coming in, and you forget that, you know, if your partner was away, you'd be waiting for weeks to hear from them.
Yeah.
If your family were in another country, which a lot of people's families were, you'd be waiting for more than weeks, months sometimes, to hear from them. And it was a very different pace of life. But we learned more in those letters about people, because we sat down and wrote down our emotions and our feelings. And that feels very important. So we spend quite a lot of time looking at the act of writing letters in the play, and we've got a fantastic traditional Irish musician, Danny O'Mahony, who's from the village next door to Listowel, where John B is from. So we have the kind of earth of North Kerry ringing in our ears as we're watching somebody sit down and actively write letters. And I really hope that it will encourage us all to pick up a pencil or a pen.
Okay.
And a stamp.
Now, that's all one thing. But the photograph on the poster for Letters of a Country Postman has Tadhg Hickey with his proud hands across the strap of his post bag as he's plainly going to be setting off across the fields of North Kerry or wherever it is. Tell me about him, because this is not called Letters Carried by a Country Postman. It is called Letters of a Country Postman. Tell me about the central character, your old Segosha, Mocky Fondue.
So Mocky Fondue is a really wonderful character. He really believes very, very strongly in his job. He's very upstanding, but he's friends to everybody. And he's that person that all of the characters in the village of Lisnacoo and the postal district of Ballyfee that the piece is about, they stop him on his way sometimes to ask him where their letters have gone, because they think he's hiding them.
Oh.
Sometimes... to ask if there is a letter because somebody's away. And Mocky is considering his life because he's coming towards the end of his career. And his letters are to his friend Hamish, who lives in Glasgow. His letters are to his wife Bridget, who's away in America for the summer. And he also receives a lot of letters from people in the local area. He's a really lovable character. And it's a funny one for Tig, because whilst Mocky has the wit, that kind of dry, acerbic and slung over the shoulder wit of the writing, it's not a kind of pure character role for Tig. There are some fantastic characters in the piece, but he's the one through line throughout the story. And he's brilliant. I'm really enjoying working with him. And I think he's enjoying doing something a little bit different.
Yes, for sure. But like, Tig is just quite versatile anyway. He's such a strong actor. He's such a strong character actor. He's such a strong writer. I mean, like, there isn't a thing literally now that Tig Kickey can't do, because he can sing on top of it all. The only thing I haven't seen him doing is dancing. But I'm sure if he was put to it, he could actually pull that one out of the bag as well.
Well, you never know, Elmarie. Come down to the Listen to Coo Elms and you may see a step or two from everybody.
Way. Quadruple threat. There it is. But like, what a great cast. It's not a one-man show. You have a number of others as well. So, I mean, is there a device that you used to reveal the letters to us?
Yes. So I saw Dennis Conway's brilliant adaptation of The Letters of a Love-Hungry Farmer a few years ago, which was very much the monologue piece, and looked at that act of writing letters and receiving letters. And instead, we've looked at the act of storytelling, because the letters, in a sense, are little short stories. So we have a cast of four people on stage. So we've Tig, we've a brilliant actor from Wexford called Maddie O'Carroll, and we have a Cork actor called Chloe O'Reilly, as well as Danny O'Mahony, the musician. And they are all, in a way, cast as storytellers. So they will directly talk to us. They'll build the world for the audience in front of them and introduce us to Mocky Fondue's world. So there is a device whereby the actors are, at one, a storyteller in their own right, as well as stepping into the characters that they play.
John B was just a genius, wasn't he, at drawing and writing and evoking personalities with the way he described their little idiosyncrasies or the little movements they'd make, or by giving individual characters certain turns of phrases and the descriptions of them. Like, everybody can see somebody from their own parish in this parish, no matter what John B was writing about.
Totally, and I think that's what's so magical about it, is that he's writing ordinary people and he's making them extraordinary. And I think sometimes, we've talked about this quite a lot in rehearsal, sometimes you see those big John B plays and they're very large and very dramatic and the characters are very, very present. And actually, I think sometimes the challenge is not to do that, is to go against the humour of the writing or the trying to express in a big way the idiosyncrasies, because actually it's throwaway humour. Mm. And it's that wit of people who are ordinary and they throw something hilarious over their shoulder. And we don't realise until it's landed how hilarious it is. So it's been a real experiment in the performance style as well, because if it's really funny, you don't need to play it as funny. Mm. You can be very serious and let the audience find it funny.
Absolutely. Listen, that is the genius of John B. Keane's writing, and it's really excited. There's huge excitement, actually, about this adaptation and about the cast and about Tig and about the play and about summer having a John B. Keane, which is a huge, massive crowd pleaser of a play, to come to the stage of the Everyman. So massive congratulations to you, Sophie. And I know, I mean, for example, I see you mentioned Peter Power. There's a great kind of working partnership between the two of you with what you've conceived and I suppose allowed to flourish in the Everyman as well, which it must be hugely rewarding.
Absolutely. And I'm very privileged to have worked with Peter in the past before I started working at the Everyman. In fact, I worked with him in my last job as well. I brought him to a small town in rural England to do the sound design for another show. And it's been fantastic working with Peter and with Danny. And Peter and Danny will work together to create magic, because Danny's accordion may be presented live, but it may not sound exactly as you're expecting it. So the entire sound design for the performance is coming from elements of Danny's accordion.
I love the way you drop in a few teasers. That's the way to do it, Sophie. Listen, you have previews on Friday and Saturday of this week, and then next Tuesday as well. But you're officially opening on Wednesday week and running then almost to the end of August, from the 10th to the 27th. So there are obviously cheaper seats usually for the previews. So people want to get onto the Everyman website, which is, of course, as always, everymancork.com, and check out Letters of a Country Postman, starring Tadhg Hickey, but obviously with a whole layer of everything going on underneath. Sophie Motley, Artistic Director of the Everyman. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Thanks a million.
Thanks so much, Anne-Marie.
Now, doesn't that sound exciting? It really, really does. And wishing them all the very best of luck with that.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.